It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. It is Sunday morning. Fall has arrived in the Southeast. And yeah, investing and saving money and politics and economy and markets and everything happening in the world as objectively as humanly possible here on a Sunday morning. Also, to take your calls and questions. We only have an hour today. So if you have calls and questions, let's get moving. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Hey, if anybody has a question, not a lot going on in the world. Just the President of the United States has COVID-19. He's at Walter Reed Memorial Hospital. We have the thought, I asked this question this week. Ryan actually asked me this question. And we said we should study that. Because the question really goes something like this. I mean, we're less than a month away from an election. It is that time of year and the time in once every 4 years when investors get really worried about what is next. You've got about half of America that loves Donald Trump, and it would be very sad if he loses. You have half of America that is very eager and excited for Joe Biden to win. And I said this week, and this is before the news of the president coming down with COVID-19, and looking at, and we know about presidential cycles, and I'll just do a quick recap of that. We know that if we look at different years of the presidential cycle, we know that there's a fairly large difference between year one, year two, year three, and year four on average. We know that year three is actually a really good year, and the theory behind that is that the year before an election, the president's doing everything they can, monetary policy, fiscal policy, pushing anything, any buttons they can, regulation, you name it, to have the best economy possible so that he has a better chance the next year. And that is perhaps, and this goes all the way back into the 1930s until today, you can see if you compare year one, two, three, four in every presidential cycle, year three is by far the best year, up almost 15, 16% on average. Whereas year one and year two, those are not so good, particularly year one, which is the worst year. And you may think of it this way. Well, that's the year where politicians say, hey, guys, we know we got to make some tough calls here. Let's eat our spinach. Let's do it now. Let's get it out of the way so that in a year or two, the world maybe focuses more on the great economy in year three and we move forward. And that is the narrative behind the presidential cycle itself and returns of the stock market. Well, I wanted to ask a slightly different question. I wanted to answer the following question. And again, it's perhaps more relevant than it's ever been. Here with President Trump at Walter Reed Memorial Hospital, he is fighting against COVID-19. The question we have here on Money Matters as investors is this. Has any president ever left office with the stock market lower? Another way to look at it. So I'm not looking at overlapping all third years and all second years and all first years like I just talked about. I'm talking about, well, if we went back and looked at Roosevelt and Truman and Eisenhower and Kennedy and Johnson and Nixon and Carter, did anybody enter the office of presidency and then leave the office of presidency with the stock market lower? I think we can wrap our arms around that a little bit better than over a long period of time. And that's how we speak of investing, over really long cycles, long periods of time. Markets go up. They tend to go up over time. But I think we also remember life and history to some extent through these presidential cycles. Oh, I remember when George W. Bush was in office. I remember when Bill Clinton was in office. We remember when President Carter was in office. So I wanted to go back and look at these terms. And these terms, of course, tend to be, well, 4 years for the most part. Two elections, obviously, or two terms would be 8 years. So these are chunks of time, four-year chunks, eight-year chunks. Now, of course, there were certain periods of time, there are certain presidencies that were not 4 years. Clearly, in the case of Kennedy, that obviously with his assassination, he was not in office for four full years. Then we look at all, he was in office for about 3 years. than if you think about what happened with Ford, who came in after Nixon's second term, which was cut short. He was not in office for 4 years. So there's some exceptions of the 4 and 8 year chunks. But we remember time in, hey, when he was president, when this president was in office. And I think that may give us a little bit of context on thinking about markets over time. How do they do? And I want to give you that answer here today. The other part of the equation here today is just this thought of the unknown. And that is why we get nervous as investors headed into election, because we don't know exactly if we have a new candidate come into the White House. Well, what are they going to do? What are they going to lobby for? Are they going to raise taxes or lower taxes? Increase regulation, decrease regulation? We don't really know. Even what they say on the campaign trail, we don't know what they're actually going to do when they get into office. So we have this talk of the unknown as we get into a presidential season. And it just, and markets get very jumpy and very nervous when we get into that season. So, and just when we thought that 2020 couldn't get any crazier, the president gets COVID-19. Less than a month before the election here, as I sit here today, this morning, this beautiful fall morning. And in the heart of the debate season, this is going to make that any Tom Clancy novel from days of old blush, because they're going to seem boring after 2018. Well, in 2018, all of that happened. We had all of that happen just in 1 year. Now, I also wanted to think about this as we pray. And it's interesting when I see the video from last night. This is President Trump. He's at Walter Reed Memorial Hospital. He has a jacket on, a white shirt, and he seems in pretty good spirits. I would say he's not 100%. He's not quite as invigorated as maybe usual. But he's also only, as we just learned too overnight, that he had a really high fever. His oxygen levels were low. And we know that COVID-19 is a longer term. It doesn't necessarily just happen over a day or two. Now, my experience with this with friends that I have that have had COVID so far have been in the kind of the younger categories. They're not in their 70s like the president. For the most part, what I've seen is folks being able to get over it in, let's say, a couple of days. But he even said this in his video. He said, as you know, my wife, Melania, is a few years younger than me. So sense of humor intact. And two, saying that statistically, it's going to be tougher for him. And we don't know because it takes multiple days to get through this. So for now, here we are, and it's Sunday, and that was last night. So we've really Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So we're going to be kind of day 4 or 5 here. And it seems that the president is doing okay. So that is welcome. That is very welcome news. But he's right that statistically, if you're 70 and older, the survival rates, and these are just, I just went and looked through this weekend, and the CDC has changed this and updated this over and over and over again. But the survival rate for COVID-19 for 70, if you're 70 plus, is about 95%. And that's my kids. This is the first thing they asked me when we heard about President Trump having COVID-19. Is President Trump going to make it, Dad? Is he going to die? Well, I think of a couple of things. And I think, first of all, this guy is a fighter. And if you think about his tireless, just like a freight train. President Trump is like a freight train. If you think about what he was doing before just a campaign, if you go back to 2015 and 16, his campaign, flying on multiple cities on multiple days, sleeping 3 or 4 hours a night. I mean, he has a lot of energy and a lot of stamina, President Trump. And then, of course, he's getting he talked about the miracle on treatments. He said these are miracles. And really, they are and you can think of it any way you want about it. The miracles from God is what he said. You can say the miracle of modern medicine. Whatever you want to, however you want to look at this, is that it is miraculous. It is miraculous what our medical community, the biotech industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the vaccine and therapeutic R&D industry is nothing short of miraculous. And if you go to Fast Cures, which is a track by the Milken Institute, and we have spent a lot of time on that here on Money Matters, there are hundreds and hundreds of therapies that are for people that are already sick. And we've heard that the president is taking this polyclonal antibody treatment, which is still not approved yet. We've been talking about that from Regeneron as the biotech company that has done this for a very long time. And we knew that they were one of the leading companies that essentially used this same, really was a monoclonal antibody treatment that virtually wiped out Ebola. So there was an approved treatment for Ebola that did fairly well, something like it half people lived by taking it rather than 90% of people passing away. When they were doing the critical, when they were doing phase three trials of their version of this, they stopped everything and said, this works so well. Regeneron's drug works so well. They said, here, let's use this. And then the survival rates went to 90%+ for one of the most deadly diseases the earth has ever seen, Ebola. So we've been tracking all of these, the vaccines, that we have multiple vaccines that we know in that are in phase three here in the United States. We have multiple antibody or therapeutics that are in phase three, not fully approved yet, but that seems to be what the president is taking. And he said that these are miracles, and they really are. These are miracles of modern medicine. So to my children, I said, the president will survive, right? In my opinion, first of all, the way the statistics are that in general, 95% of folks, so 94.6%, 70 plus, are surviving COVID-19. Then you look at the president who's getting the very best medical treatment on the planet. He's even taking some of these experimental drugs. I'd say he has a very, very high probability of getting through this. And from the video I saw last night, he looked to be doing pretty well, which is very different. And he made this comment from his wife, Melania, who's younger. But the younger you go in the statistics, and this is right off the page of the CDC, obviously COVID-19 is easier and easier to beat the younger you are. So if you're 19 or younger, it's a 99.997 survival rate. You for 20 to 49, it's a 99.98% survival rate, but it's still scary, and it's very scary as you get into these upper years, particularly 70 plus. But I do wish the president obviously well, and I do think he gets through this. But in a year when you thought things couldn't get any crazier for the economy, the stock market, we're going to go through a study and look at what happened for different presidential terms. Is the market higher or lower when the president left? We'll talk about that when Money Matters returns straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. The number 404-872-0750. Stay tuned for really our answer and analysis of going from term to term to term on what it looks like. Stock market returns per presidency, not per year, but per presidency. On the line, looks like Lou joins us on the line. Lou, what's going on? How can we help?
Wes, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Here's my situation. Temporarily, I'm out of a job right now. I've been surviving on my savings account. And then I realized I had some savings bonds that I had not used. When going through the savings bonds, which was between $500 and $1,000 each, I was missing some. And this is when we were moving from a new home. And I must have misplaced them or something. My question to you, Wes, is how can I get a hold of someone at the U.S. Savings Bond Office to see if they could do some tracking on those two bonds? I talked with my real closest friend, and she said, oh, my God, I've been after that for myself. So could you help us as to how we can go and retrace?
So you literally, these are just these are lost certificates. They just got lost during a move or something.
Yes.
Ooh. Okay. So it's almost like losing cash, but maybe perhaps, Lou, not as bad, because here's what you can do. And I'm not going to say that this is going to happen overnight. And you're going to be dealing with the Treasury here, mm-hmm. and you're going to have to go file some paperwork, I believe. But yeah. This is the process that you should do. If you go to treasurydirect.gov, they actually have a form for this. It's form 1080. It's FS form 1048. It's form 1048. And you have to give them your specific, try to give your specific month or year of purchase, right? Month and year. You've got to give your social security, your name, your middle, all these different things, and then your street, all, where you've lived. And then they're going to track that for you. And they're going to track it for a variety of different kinds of savings bonds. So E, double E, savings bonds is one area. They have an area for H bonds and double H. So, Lou, I think you can get these found for you. I think you actually have a good shot at finding these couple thousand dollars that you may have lost in a move. Maybe that's just a good, hopefully that's a uplifting news on a Sunday morning for Lou in a year where there's just not a ton of uplifting news. But you're listening to Money Matters right here on 95.5 WSB. Stay tuned. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. It's Sunday morning. Can the year get any crazier? Here we are. We have a debate this week, which of course everyone called basically a food fight that was masked as a debate. And then only a few hours later, the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, now has COVID-19 and is in Walter Reed Memorial Hospital. The good news there is that despite all these reports, and by the way, Twitter is just such a dark place. Now, this is why we spend very little time on Twitter. Ryan Ely and I were just talking about this, and it is a good place for breaking news, and it is a good news source. But it's so easy to get just scooped up in vile. And it is the most vile place of all media in America, really in the world. There was a tweet that I saw was a news story about Chris Christie, and then it clicked on it and went to Chris Christie's feed, his Twitter feed, and it just said, hey, he's going to the hospital out of precaution, he has asthma, he's obviously overweight. And then the comments were just awful. I mean, they're just so mean. And it's just a vile place. Hopefully Chris Christie didn't read the comments. But anyway, we're here on a Sunday morning, and we're trying to look at the reality of the world and perhaps the slightly brighter side of the world. And I want to go into, so just a couple of thoughts around this election, how presidencies fare when it comes to the stock market. And this is a question Ryan Ely brought up this week and said, look, we know that the presidential cycle, year one is bad, year three is great, year two and four are okay. But what if you look at it per presidency? Did any president come into office and then leave office with a market lower? And I said, that's a great question, Ryan. Let's figure it out. And we did. So Ryan went back and looked through the course of history back to 1928. It started with Hoover, then Roosevelt, then Truman, and all the way up till the present day with President Trump, who is mostly through his first term. And let's look at some of these. Let's look at the data. Let's look at And I think part of the reason I wanted to look at it this way is that investing is really about putting things into context. And how we think about investing as investors is super important. It's about putting things into context. We think of the presidential cycle and particular elections as events that tend to end up is really bad for markets. This is going to be terrible for stocks. Political uncertainty, wading into the unknown. Isn't that going to cause indigestion? Isn't it going to be bad for markets? This is interesting, too. Before I even get to the presidential data, if you look at calendar years, and this was a study I just saw this week from T. Rowe Price, that election years, believe it or not, have a lower standard deviation, which just means there's actually overall less volatility in election years than all other years in markets. So this is from 1927 through the end of last year. There were 23 election years that they studied. The standard deviation on this was 16.9. All other years, 19, or all years, 19.7. And the non-election years were, standard deviation was 21. That just means that higher standard deviation means more chunkiness, if you will, more yo-yo, if you will, more volatility. So just in general, it's very interesting to me. I would not have guessed that if somebody asked me, were election years more or less volatile? I would have said, they're certainly more volatile. They're not. Now, it's not dramatically less, but just worth noting. So we look at these, so elections, these political outcomes, they do make folks emotional, and it makes people nervous, particularly because you're thinking about your candidate and your party and your political beliefs, and you think, well, if that's not in the White House, then the market can't do well. And that's why there's just this and today I can't imagine, and listen, we know that over the course of history there were duels with politicians that involved firearms, right? Today it's just maybe the divisiveness is moved into Twitter, which is dark and vile in its own right. But today is perhaps as polarized and as divided as we've ever been. But I want, again, we'll get back. Wanted to know the answer to the following question. Has any president left office with the stock market lower? Essentially, that's the question, is looking at 8 and 4 year chunks of time. Some are shorter in the case of Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford. And here's the verdict. Here is the verdict. There are three presidents that don't pass the test. There are three presidents that don't pass the test over the last 100 years. The first is Hoover. If you go back to the very, very first in our study, Hoover took over right before the Great Depression. So I don't know how relevant this example is. He gets into office, then you have the stock market crash, then you have the Great Depression. So that in itself was a really, really bad timing. And that four-year period, markets were down, and down a lot. So first Hoover took over right before the Great Depression. That is one where markets were lower. The second one is Nixon. So if you go and look at Nixon, obviously he served 4 years, and then he served less than 2 years in his second term before he was, well, right a little over two years in his second term. And then he left in a helicopter, and he was no longer president. So the second was Nixon, and that was, to some extent, you can say that was because it was cut short. Otherwise, it would have been positive. The third, and this is a lot of where I spent my career, George W. Bush. George W. Bush, again, the timing could not have been worse from a stock market perspective. George W. Bush took over January 2001, right before 9/11. Right before 9/11. And then he left office in the end of 2008, which is the bottom of the financial crisis. If he would have been in office just a few more months, his return over his two terms would have been positive. So if we look at this in chunks of time, and this is this putting into context, if we're thinking about, well, over time, markets go up. Okay, well, maybe let's think of it. What are good big chunks of time to look at? Well, presidential terms. Those are really important chunks of time. There, by the way, these term, these chunks of history, 4 year periods of time, there are 26 of them since 1928. And only 5 out of 26 of them were negative. So only 19% of the time a president came into office, when they left office, markets were lower. 21 out of 26. So 81% of the time, no matter what happened over the course of history, no matter how bad things got. And remember, I'm going all the way back to the Depression. So we looked at the Depression. We looked at World War II. We looked through all of the difficulties that we have gone through in America. And 81% of the time, president starts office and leaves office and the stock market is higher. And I think that that is an important way to look at how presidential elections impact markets as we go into November 3rd. Markets require time. They require time to end up positive. Presidential cycles are these significant chunks of time that I'm able to kind of wrap my arms around those periods of time. And these chunks of time are almost always positive. Now, if we were to look at our basket of Republican, or you can just say GOP, and versus the Democratic basket. Now, let's move on to something a little more specific. Now, this is maybe to me more interesting than important. What's important is to be a good long-term investor. If you missed last week's show, by the way, probably the most important investment show that we have done in many years, because it's really all about the power of rising dividends relative to investing in bond interest. And we did the show last weekend. We did the research a week or 2 weeks ago. I did a show on it last weekend. And then really spent a lot of the week writing about that data. And I'm going to publish this in the AJC. It would be next Sunday you'll see this article. But it's really going to be about the power of rising stock dividends. And I did a white paper on it and then an article. I'll do an article for the AJC about it. If you invested $10,000 in the S&P 500 in that first year back in 1980, and you waited to all the way till today in 2020, from 1980, 10 grand paid you only $421 the first year. If you were to hold on to that this whole time over about 40 years, you'd now be getting $5,700 in dividends, which is a 57% rate of interest per year on your original investment. Your yield at cost, significant. Oh, by the way, this is if you took all your dividends every single year and didn't even reinvest them. So you're living off the money. That 10 grand would now be worth $287,000, paying you 13.5-fold what it paid you originally. Just the sheer power of dividends, not to be forgotten. So if you missed last week's Money Matters, you can find it on the podcast just as a reminder of how significant and important that concept is. If you're thinking about retirement, what do I invest my money in so I have to protect my purchasing power and be able to live and spend money in retirement? I personally don't know of a better long-term way to do that. That's my preference. There's a million ways to skin the cat. That's my favorite way to do it. And if you miss that, you can listen to the podcast, not today's podcast from Sunday, but last week, The Power of Rising Dividends. By the way, if you do listen to the podcast, if you could leave a review, if you hate me, put a review in there that you can't stand Money Matters. I can't stand Money Matters. And I've gotten more of those rough reviews because the show, we've talked more about politics in the last couple of months. I used to never talk about it. So when you start talking about politics, people say, I can't stand your show anymore because you talk about politics. Okay, sorry. Tune out. Unsubscribe. But if you like Money Matters, I'd love a review as well. Really, reviews in general are fine. It also helps me know where people want us to take the show. So please, if you listen to the podcast, any podcast, you just click on the Purple Podcast app on your phone or Spotify, anywhere you get a podcast, you just type in Wes Moss Money Matters and it'll come up and you can leave a review. But let's talk about these Republican versus Democratic baskets, which are, again, I get back to interesting, but really, I don't want you to make moves as an investor because of these. But I do find by tracking a certain type of company, it shows what the market is saying, where we're headed in this election. So we think of this first. What would be in the GOP basket of sucks? So the Republican basket of sucks would be things like rig or these exploration production, these oil companies that drill for oil, the coal companies, if you were to look in the healthcare sector, companies that don't require or don't have exposure to Medicare or little exposure to Medicare, defense companies like Lockheed Martin or Huntington Ingalls, banks, for-profit prisons, for-profit education, and maybe technology, well, not maybe, technology companies that would do well with less regulation. So that would be examples. These are just examples. I'm not saying run out and buy any of these companies. I'm just saying these are in the GOP or the Republican basket, where Democratic names you would invest in or what's in that basket that I would track would be things like green energy and infrastructure companies and healthcare companies that would do well under more Medicare type scenario, cannabis companies, staple companies, and then actually gun manufacturers, because under Democratic presidencies, you actually see gun sales go higher as there's this rush to go out and buy firearms. So those companies tend to do well. Solar companies, another example. So when we get back, we're going to run a quick break, but I'm going to tell you what these baskets have been telling, what they have been doing in the market, which foreshadows what investors are thinking, where they're voting with their wallets when it comes to the upcoming election. So you better stay tuned. You're listening to Money Matters right here, 95.5 WSB. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. I've promised you that I'd talk about what are these stock baskets doing, or what are they just telling us? This is interesting. Since And we, right before break, we talked about how we've got GOP basket, which would be, think about oil, energy, coal, and companies that would do well under Republican administration versus companies in the Democratic basket that do well under Democratic administration. And you can track these to see where people are really voting with their wallets. So Wall Street telling us where they think the election is going, or investors, kind of the collective thought of investors. Since the end of the summer, since July 31st, so we'll go August, September, October, where we are today, really call it 2.5, 2 months, a little over 2 months. The GOP basket is up by just a fraction of a percent, not a full percent. The Democratic basket is up 8% compared to the S&P 500, up 3.6. So that shows us over the course of the last couple of months, the market is voting that the Biden camp is certainly out front. The last 2 weeks, let's look at the last 2 weeks since September 18th, Democratic basket is up 1%. The GOP basket is down about 4% during that period of time. So same thing. That's what the market at least is saying. Interesting. The presidential debate. So if you looked at, so after that Tuesday night, what did the market do Wednesday, Thursday after that? The Democratic basket was up 2, Republican basket only up about 1. So that continued to tell the same story. But interestingly, this, and if you looked at it on Friday, the day that we knew that Trump coming down with COVID-19, and then later in the day going to Walter Reed Memorial Hospital, Trump, the GOP basket was up a lot. So it was up over almost 1.5%. The S&P 500 was down 1. And the GOP basket did much better than the Democratic one. I don't know exactly why that's the case. It was interesting to see coal companies kind of go through the roof on Friday. We don't know what the market is telling us because of that, but it is interesting certainly to watch. I will continue to keep you up to date on these baskets and what the world, the market, the economy is doing in light of the pandemic that we're in, how the president is doing, certainly, and all things economic and market throughout the week, too, on the Eric Von Hessler Show, the Von Hessler Doctrine, as well as I'm a guest there throughout the week in the morning. Stay tuned, stay safe this weekend. God bless you. Thanks for listening to Money Matters right here on 95.5 WSB.